So as we know, the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa is the, as we just said, the 9-day event. Everyone discusses it. We learn it. Even though on Tisha B'Av normally we're not allowed to learn Torah, the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa is supposed to be learned. Not only, everything else is X, and this is, you're supposed to learn it. Clearly, the reason is because the rabbis, in their infinite wisdom, realized that by studying the story correctly, we can get out of this long exile. The in that story is the roadmap to get out. And we're going to go through the story, I think, the way everyone understands it, and then we'll take a different perspective on it. And hopefully that will be the schus if we follow the new way of understanding it to actually celebrate next week Tisha B'Av. So the basic story goes like this. There was a guy named Kamsa, who's really only named in the story. He doesn't actually appear in the stories. It's actually funny. And Kamsa was a friend with a host, another guy whose name is not mentioned. He's the anonymous host, who doesn't get any blame in the story. It's a very strange story. That's why you start reading into every word of the rabbis and you realize there's a lot going on. So there's a host who's nameless, who has a friend called Kamsa who never shows up, according to the simple version. And he has an enemy called Bar Kamsa. And he sends his invitation in the mail through somebody. They didn't have mail systems. And it goes to the wrong guy. It goes to Bar Kamsa. And it says that the host and Bar Kamsa for a long time were enemies. That it does say. And Bar Kamsa shows up to the party. He got an invitation. He shows up to the party. And him and the host get into a real altercation. And the host basically throws him out. It says with his hands. He physically throws him out. And while this is happening, Bar Kamsa, as we know the story, is pleading for forgiveness. He doesn't say forgiveness. Pleading, help me out. I'll pay for this place. And he says it three different times. I'll pay for myself. I'll pay for half the party, the entire party. And he is thrown out. And his reaction is vile. I mean, he goes a scorched earth policy. Collateral damage. He's going after the whole world. He doesn't like this, and he decided that the rabbis were involved. It's very, very unclear from the story if the rabbis had any idea what was going on. The Ben Yehuda says it's clear that the rabbis did not see any of this. Ben Yehuda says, obvious, you can't even understand, you think the rabbis do it. But he obviously is a little angry, a little crazy, and he decides, again, scorched earth. He's going full out. So he goes to the government, as we know the story, and he snitches to the government. Now, the second half of the story is not so famous, I'm not sure why. But again, every word we have to go through, just the basic story. He goes to the government and he says, there's a revolution against you guys. No government wants to hear revolution. That's a bad word. So he says, revolution against you. Before we take such radical views, can you prove it? It's like a crazy idea. The Jews are radical. What do you like? Prove it. He says, I'm going to prove it. You send the sacrifice to the temple. And of course, we accept sacrifices from non-Jews as halacha. As a side note, we do. And you'll see they won't take it from you. And part of them not taking it from you is because I'm telling you, they're rebelling against you. He says, that's a great idea. Let's test it out. He came up with an idea. Let's do it. And he sends the animal. This guy, Bar Kamsa, is on a... This takes time to go from Israel to potentially the local guy, potentially sent it to Rome. This doesn't happen in 5 minutes. This guy's not calming down. He's going all out. All out. He's taking revenge on... Again, the whole Klai Yisrael wasn't at this party. Even if the rabbis were at the party, and even if they heard, there's still 6 million other people. No, he's going after this. He goes and he takes this animal, and he makes a small blemish in the animal that the non-Jews would not think is such a blemish. And he comes to the temple and says, I got this animal, the king sent it, sacrifice it. And then a debate occurs inside the temple. What do we do right now? Are we allowing this animal in or we're not? We can't allow it in Jewish law as a blemished animal. So if we allow the blemished animal on to make the king happy, people might think that blemished animals are allowed, and maybe being nice to the king and breaking laws is allowed. You start having all the OCD insecurities. I don't know what we can allow over here. Let's not do it. So I got a better idea. Let's just kill the guy. Let's kill the Bar Kamsa. According to some, if the person who started the whole thing dies, then everything's over with. Let's just kill the guy. After all, he's a musser. He's a person who put the whole Klai Yisrael in danger. He's the worst type of person. Legally, there's definitely legitimate reasons to kill him. But the reaction of the rabbis is, wait, if we kill him, you know what's going to happen? People are not going to realize. This is like, who are you thinking like this? No one's going to realize you're killing Bar Kamsa. Why? Because he's a snitch. He's the danger to society. No, they're going to think that since he put the blemish on the animal, we're killing him. We don't kill people for blemishes on animals. That's a violation, but it's a minor violation in the scheme of violations. We don't kill people for that. So we can't do that either. And they're sitting and debating back and forth. And again, this probably takes more than 4 seconds, right? 15 Jews in a room, you have 18,000 opinions. Everyone's saying what they should do. At the end, they do nothing. They do nothing, but they can't let this animal on. And as you know, we're standing here today, Kamsa Bar Kamsa, and Bar Kamsa is, he's Mr. Hitler. He's the worst of all time. He, because of his anger, his collateral damage, has destroyed the world, again, irrationally, I might say, if the rabbis didn't hear it. And he was an enemy in my book that's not made into a children's book. I have an article that's not for today. I think I did it here in the 9 days of many years ago. I have a whole explanation of why the host, who doesn't get named, if you would start the story right now, who's on the bad list? I think the host is number one. The guy came to your party, offered to pay for the party. I mean, who's not taking? Is he a Jew? Is any Jew you know being offered to pay for a full party and says no? I mean, I don't trust this guy. You invited the guy, you throw him out with your hands. You're insane. But he doesn't get named. No one knows his name. Bar Kamsa is the evil guy. So I explained in Strength Through Fire, a different class. And now the host really was unbelievable. He was doing great stuff there. And Bar Kamsa is really the worst person around. That's in the book. That's for a different lesson. Today we're taking a different direction to understand the story. So again, the main question I want to say, and the Gemara says it, he took revenge on the whole Judaism. He openly said it. The Lashon is in plural. I'm going to take revenge on them, not the host. Them, I'm going after everybody. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, one guy's a Meshuggah and Klai Yisrael, everyone's got to lose? Forget what we're looking at in this world. Let's look at Hashem's world. Hashem has this person in the world who's obviously crazy. On some level, he has to be crazy. He's an angry person. If you look in the book, it seems like that the host just told him, all I want from you is say I'm sorry. We're having a fight, just say I'm sorry, that's all I want. I don't want your money, I don't need anything, just say I'm sorry. He wouldn't do it, he's a stubborn person. He's a stubborn person, he's an angry person. He doesn't let anything go. He's a snitch that we can kill him for. He's like, this guy is really bad. He's like your mother-in-law's mother-in-law. He's like the worst of history, right? And Hashem sits around and says, you know what? I'm going to destroy Klal Yisrael. What? This doesn't sound like a very normal conversation that's going on. What? We're the angels upstairs of mercy telling God, listen, let this guy go. He can't be. This guy can't have that much power. And the whole Klal Yisrael, if he does, we're never getting out of this exile. If one Meshuggah could destroy the whole Klal Yisrael, we're finished. So it can't be. Again, that's the simple version. Everything I'm saying, even though I'm making it sound sarcastic, is the real story. We're just going to take a different story as well today. To answer this main question, how is it possible that Hashem decided to listen to this nutjob, this angry, bitter person, and decide to destroy the whole base of Mikdash? It's not fair. It doesn't seem fair. Hashem, as we call him Marach Af, because he is Marach Af, he delays punishment and punishment and punishment. What? And this guy who's clearly in the wrong decides to destroy the world, we're going to do it? It doesn't seem fair to us. So I figured what we do is we're going to flip the script. I came up with this really recently. It's a very original idea, and hopefully it's, whether true or not, I can't tell you. I wasn't there at the party, but it's a lesson for all of us that's for sure very, very applicable. And we're going to take this new perspective and try to understand it from that perspective and hopefully learn from it. So I wrote down a few phrases because I get nervous when I start winging it that I'm going to say something that will offend someone. So just know right now, any words I use right now to describe potentially Bar Kamsa, I am not speaking to anyone in this room. I'm writing a disclaimer right now. Any phrase that comes out is just thoughts that I was thinking, but I don't mean it literally. But let's discuss who Bar Kamsa is. In today in America, my brother always likes to tell me, and it just came up recently, in America, most of the terrorism acts in America are performed, sadly to say, by lonely single guys. The Arabs have their married family people doing it. But in the civilized world, most people don't walk into a place and start shooting up a bar. They don't blow themselves up. They don't attempt to shoot the president. Most people want to go by tomorrow and buy a cheese sandwich. That's how people are. We're focused on our own daily lives, our own events. We're not really trying to do all these nutty things. Who are the people doing these things? In general, sadly to say, it's the extremely desperate people. I would say the better word is lonely. The loneliest people around, they're just by themselves. They don't have any friends. Clearly, they're lacking social skills by most of them. You start reading about these people, they can't get themselves any friends whatsoever. And they're just a little angry, and sometimes, again, they might laugh 2 seconds too late on a joke. Maybe they don't clean themselves the way they should. Sadly to say, they're missing hygiene. They're just the lonely outliers, if that's the word, the fringe of society. Again, nothing personal on anyone who has these Nebuch situations. Probably usually loaded and loaded with insecurities that would take years of therapy to help. Really the outliers and the Nebuchadnezzar people. And it's possible, I think this week I'm saying probable, that Bar Kamsa fit into these modes. I mean, imagine the situation. You're getting invited to a party of a guy who hates you. You get the invitation in the mail. Now, most people, I was recently by a friend of mine, and he told me there are Ephraim Waxman. He's much bigger than me. Ephraim Waxman said, the worst words in Klal Yisrael are, we have a var tonight. It was a whole speech that he gave. Nobody's interested in going to it. I don't want to say, again, if you have a simcha, everyone should come with a smile on the face, but nobody really wants to go out at night. I got to get dressed. Women have it worse than men. Sometimes I put on a tie, sometimes not. You have to get dressed up, and that it's a whole pain, right? You get an invitation. Most of the invitations you get in the mail, sadly to say, we're Baruch Shem, we have a lot of simchas in Klal Yisrael. Most invitations you get, your first reaction is not as great as it should be. Okay, so this guy gets an invitation. Imagine, put yourself in this guy's situation. He gets an invitation from a guy he's been fighting with for years. And he shows up. Okay, that's already a little odd, according to me. It's already a little strange. If you want to say, Rabbi, don't be so negative. He's a good guy. He's coming to make peace. No, he did not make peace. He walked into the party. If you read the story like I just said it, he never went over to the host and said, Mazel Tov. He never went over to the host and said, by the way, thank you for inviting me. He never went over to the host after I described my book and said, I apologize. Nothing. He goes and he sits there and he starts eating. It's a little, what I would say, socially off. It's the odd fringe guy who's showing up like this, who's socially off. And then the host comes over to him and says, by the way, I don't really know if you belong here. Okay, the potential socially person would say, would say, okay, listen, you're right, I'm sorry. That's the first word you say. I'm sorry, I made a mistake, got an invitation. He doesn't even say I got an invitation. If you read the story, he never says it. He never says, by the way, you made the mistake maybe by inviting me, but I understand it probably was a mistake. You have a friend named Kamsa, similar address. Nothing. His reaction is, can I pay for something? Is that the normal reaction someone's going to make at a party? It just seems a little wild. And then he's fighting with people. He gets thrown out. He's paranoid in his head that, what? All the rabbis saw me do it. What? Why do you think everyone's looking at you and everyone's... It's just a socially inept person. Nebuch. He's a Nebuchadnezzar person. He has no friends. He has no friends that stood up for him. No person in the party said, leave Bar Kamsa alone. I believe if the host would have thought that Bar Kamsa is sitting at a table, picture yourself, if he's sitting by himself, this is easy to do. Imagine Bar Kamsa sitting at a table with 17 other people. And he's the highlight of the conversation. He's making the jokes. He's showing his Twitter feed, whatever these things are. And he's like, everyone loves Bar Kamsa. Then the host would be crazy to throw him out. And then we wouldn't be talking about Bar Kamsa. We'd be talking about the host, the evil guy who threw out the popular guy at the party doing card tricks. Instead, no, we don't have any. Nobody stands up for Bar Kamsa. It's possible. Nobody knew Bar Kamsa. Why? Because he's the misfit sitting in his room and hasn't left his room in 5 days. He's watching the internet how to shoot the president. He's just a socially off guy. And the socially off guy reacts that what? Everyone always hates me. Right? But the idea is they're all by themselves sitting around in a room and paranoid, insecure. Pick everything you don't want in yourself. God forbid, anything you don't want in yourself. Right? There's certain things you can take medications for. Baruch Hashem, in today's world, someone's, let's say, nervous. You take medication, you calm down. Someone's angry, they give them, I don't know what type of pills, they have all the type of stuff to get the guy a little slow. If someone has insecurities, I don't know, and has anxieties, it's very difficult, some of these insecurities, to get a pill. If they did, we'd be billionaires today. Come up with a pill that makes you think, again, a general you, you're brilliant, you're funny. I mean, I try to convince myself of this every day. You're brilliant, you're funny, you're good-looking, yeah. But most people don't walk around like this. It's just the way the world is. And it's possible to say that this Bar Kamsa was just overloaded. Never. It's a fair assumption to make that 2,000 years ago in Klal Yisrael, Bar Kamsa did not get the therapy required. It's not a fair assumption to make. So Bar Kamsa sitting around, he's in a bad place. And because of that, he becomes the guy on a rooftop shooting the president, or the guy walking into a bar, the wrong type of bar. So these nut jobs, Nebuch, I'm calling them nuts, but they're sick people. These sick people walking into a room and shooting random strangers for no crazy reason, standing on rooftops and shooting random people, it's just nuts. But the answer is, and you find out most of the time, that they were lonely people, they were insecure, the father was abusive, the mother was abusive, the cousin did things to them, the cat, they put the cat in the microwave oven. I don't want to get too graphic here. But very, very, very unhealthy people. And never got the help they needed, sadly to say. And then, of course, the normal parents buy a gun. It's always like that, right? So all of these people are sitting in their situation, and life is just bad. And Bar Kamsa was in that situation where nobody stood up for him. Part of it was paranoid. Part of it was, in the end, he was the fringe guy on the side. Nobody's guy is the fringe guy on the side, sadly to say. So last night, I remember the story. Mom was preparing for this class. And I called a friend of mine in Texas. He's a rabbi there. It's an interesting, fascinating story. I remember him telling me this story. But okay, could be. He told me he doesn't remember it, so it can't be true. It's a very fair response. I'm going to tell you the story he told me. I told him he has to get his wife on the phone. She was sleeping. I'm like, it can't be that I made up this whole story. So it doesn't make any sense. So he had told me the story when he became a rabbi out of town. That he used to invite the college kids and all these people over. And he one time had this woman, this girl, come over to the house. I don't know who I wasn't there. This girl came to the house. They're having a meal. She was sitting on the side, quiet, biting her nails. You know, again, socially a little bit off, whatever it is. And this is going on. But he's a rabbi out of town. He's excited for Kiruv and his wife's cooking food, the whole thing. And at the end of the meal, he goes over to the woman who didn't say a word the whole time. Nothing. And she was just sitting there weird. He said, it's funny because that's how I remember it. She laughed like 10 seconds too long. And he went over to her at the end and he told her, by the way, it was great to see you. I don't really know you. Today you didn't talk much. I didn't get a chance to really speak to you. There were too many guests here. But by the way, that seat you're sitting on next Friday night, that's your seat. That's what he told me the story. So then he's like, it was a throwaway line. He's not even thinking about it, right? And a week later, she shows up. Did he know she was coming? Did he not know? It wasn't that big a deal. She's there at the table. And then the next week, she's a little bit more talkative. Maybe she's only 6 seconds off on the jokes. Whatever it was. See, at the end of the night, she was leaving. And he said to her again, oh, by the way, thanks for coming back. You know, kids liked you. Next week, same seat. It's your seat. And she told him, you should know that I've been getting my affairs in order. I planned on killing myself tonight. This is what... And I didn't do it because last week you told me that. I need a drink. If you have a drink for a second? Yeah. So last week you told me this, and you told me my seat, I came back. My friend told me last night this never happened. I have no idea. I think it did happen. That's my memory. So I called friend one. He said it never happened. So I said, okay, could that really be? I made this whole thing up in my head. So he tells me, call the other rabbi in Texas. It might have been him. He said, this didn't happen with me. I told him to call his wife. He didn't want to wake up his wife. So I call rabbi two. This is all last night. And I call my other friend in Texas. Also a rabbi. Last night I got lucky. They picked up the phones. He picks up the phone. I tell him the story. He says, wow, that's amazing. It could be a story I told you, but you're mixing it up. I said, really? What kind of mixed up? He said, let me tell you a story. And his shver is not alive. He lived a couple blocks from here. His name was Shmuel Klein. So I lived on Avenue I and 28, 27, close by. So he told me, say over the story for my shver. And it happened with my friend's wife. But this is not the story I just told you. So it's a little less dramatic, I hate to tell you. But it's an unbelievable idea. This is what I want to talk about. So the next story was that his shver lived around there. And one night he was coming home from shul, and he heard he had a single older boy sitting in a basement, lived in a basement on Avenue I, and he was singing his mirrors. So he walked by, he heard the guy singing, the guy either on tune, off tune, irrelevant, he was singing. So he came into the house, and he told his daughter, my friend's wife, do me a favor, go next door with your sister, the two of you, go tell the guy that I want him to come for the meal. So they went next door, they invited the guy for the meal. He came in and told him, I heard you singing, you're such a good voice, and they have a whole Friday night meal. At the end of the meal, the guy tells him, or it was the next day, he tells you, you should know that this was not as dramatic as checking out, but Lamais, you should know that I was planning on giving up Shabbos anymore. I can't do this religion anymore. It's just too much for me. I'm sitting by myself in my basement. No one's gurus me. No one talks to me. The whole Nebuchadnezzar took a situation of people who are in those lonely situations. And he told this, Shmuel Klein, he told him, you should know that I was not planning on keeping Shabbos anymore. This was my last harass. I made Kiddush out loud. That's why you heard me this week. You never heard me. I made Kiddush out loud. I decided to sing Zmiris out loud. The whole thing was really as a goodbye to God. And Lamaisi, you invited me over. You were so nice to me. You should know that I'm going to start keeping Shabbos. You always was keeping Shabbos. I'm going to continue keeping Shabbos as well. The idea is possibly. So this is the second guy called me to tell me the story, Grada. So he told me the story, and he said, I don't know about the first story, but call the third rabbi. Last night I spent my whole night on the phone with Texas last night. I was trying to appear for a class. Instead, I'm getting all these stories. So the second guy told me, I don't know if the first guy's story did it. I don't know. I have no idea. This is my story from my father-in-law. And this is a for sure true story. My wife could say over the story. You could say my shver's name. It's 100% accurate. And the guy Shomer Shabbos today. But call the third rabbi in Texas. I'm like, because maybe he knows what your story you're talking about. Because again, I have the story in my head about the girl. So I called the third rabbi last night. He tells me, listen, if it happened by either one of these two rabbis, I for sure know about it. It's such an insane story. How is it possible I wouldn't know about it? But I do want to say this. He said, I don't want to tell you a different story. So he told me this story. He told me he actually saw in some, I don't know, I want to say names, but one of these famous books, it became famous, the story. So he said, this third rabbi, he tells me that there's a story in Panovich Yeshiva that a guy became a Baal Tshuva. He wasn't from, he became Baal Tshuva, and he hit the pinnacle. He had got the Panovich when Panovich was like the top Yeshiva in the world. And he's there, but as I tell my students all the time, making that adjustment from high school in five towns to a full-time yeshiva is not a very easy thing to do. It looks good on paper, but you got to realize it's very, very depressing. One kid called me last week. He called me last week. He just came back from Israel now, year one. And he called me up just to tell me, Rabbi, I remember the speech you gave me on how when November, December comes, I'm going to want to really go crazy because the rain, I'm stuck indoors and I can't do this. You should know it got me through that week. He just called me last week. So it's a very tough adjustment. So this guy's sitting in Panovich Yeshiva and he's like, I don't know what I'm doing here. This is 20 hours a day of learning. It's mind-blowingly difficult. No one understands. We have one Reb Chaim Kanievsky for a reason, because it's very, very, very difficult. And I'm sitting around, this guy's saying over the story. Friend told me last night, I knew the guy. He's saying over the story, and he's like, I couldn't do this anymore. I don't know. I can't read the words that well. Everyone else looks like they're doing so well. It's very, very humbling to sit around thinking everyone else is really way ahead of you. They're also acting, but nobody understands. It's all one big act. The whole world today is built on a house of cards. And he doesn't realize that. I tell it to my students all the time. When you get there, I told the guy that last week who called me. He said, that week got me through it. I'm like, Why? He said, I remember you told me that it's going to be tough. But everyone was way ahead of me. I said, no, that wasn't the whole speech. The whole speech, everyone's not ahead of you. Thank you for calling me, but you only remember half the speech. Not everyone's ahead of you. But people have this concept, especially today in America with the social media. Everyone's way ahead of me. All the stupidity. So what happens is this. This guy decides he's giving up. No one spoke to this guy. It's cold places. Nobody spoke to me. Nobody said anything to me. I'm sitting by myself. I can't get a charusa. That's really dangerous. Sit by yourself for 4 hours and stare. Imagine I hand you right now. Women don't sit and learn. I hand you a book in Chinese. And you can't read Chinese. And I say, sit in front of this book and just sit by yourself and pretend you're reading it. Within 2 days, you're going to be in a very bad place. So he said he's sitting there and he's not doing well. He decides he's going to get online to the Rosh Hashiva. This is a long time ago. I think it was Rosh Hashiva. He's going online to Rosh Hashiva. I'm going to say goodbye to him. I said, listen, I can't do this anymore. And he's sitting online and he's very, very down. And as he's online, the guy behind him says, by the way, your collar on your jacket is no good. Fix your collar. I know it's a famous story. Fix your collar. He said it changed his whole life. He realized not everyone is not being garrison. It's not true. Maybe no one comes over, maybe they do come over, whatever it is, but it's not a true thing. So I want to say like this. We are living in a generation, I think everyone agrees, it's not a crazy thing to say, we are in the loneliest generation around. The loneliest generation probably in the history of the world. Whatever you say with social media, maybe it creates more loneliness. Go read the reports about that. That's irrelevant to how we got to this situation. And I'm not even discussing, again, I don't want to insult or say things that people are going to call me up afterward, but we'll say there's a singles crisis. If we agree with that statement, whatever it means, and there's, God forbid, divorces and almanas and kids in high school, most people in the world today, tragically, feel alone. They feel alone. They're not in a good place. Whether true or not true, whether they're a little paranoid, nobody, thankfully, you know, is getting on a building and shooting somebody, but we're all a little bit of a lonely place. Like Bar Kamsa was. And it could be, the Gemara says this statement. I can't say this statement. The Gemara says that one of the great Goyim, Tunis Rufus, came to Rabbi Akiva and told him, does God really like poor people? Can't be that God likes poor people, because otherwise he would make them poor. A philosophical question. Can God like the poor people? Let's make them this way. So Rabbi Akiva told him, you're crazy. He likes the poor people more than the rich people. And he only made the poor people poor to give them the opportunity to help the rich people give tzedakah. So it means when we're looking at the world and we look at the rich people and the poor people, not getting into that, but the poor people are there for one reason, help out rich people. It is possible to say that the reason why Hashem created our generation today of extreme loneliness, and I don't know if I said it before, I'm not looking at it enough. Married people are lonely. I don't want to say only single people. I want to be clear about that, just in case some single person calls me up and starts screaming at me. No, there are many married people who are lonely as well. People are lonely. People sitting at weddings in a group of people showing pictures on YouTube, whatever, your WhatsApp, are lonely. We're in a generation, sadly to say, for whatever reason, for whatever how it came to be, of a very, very lonely generation. And it could be, very possible, that this is the reason we need this generation right now. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is setting a system up. He created poor people for rich people. He's creating lonely people for other people. I don't want to say unlonely people, but other people. Why? Because of the original mistake 2,000 years ago was that we had this loner called Bar Kamsa, who everyone vilified. Until today, you were vilifying Bar Kamsa. Worst person in the world, a temper, couldn't get over it. He invited to the party. He should have said, I'm sorry. A really not good person, how you came into this conversation. Maybe a little bit understand that, no, he's not a good person. I don't know, but a lot of it is just built on years of frustration and insecurities, just in a bad mental state of mind, this Bar Kamsa. And no one in Klai Yisrael got up and helped him out. It's an amazing thing. Bar Kamsa's thought, that's what it says. The rabbi saw and no one helped me. Blame the rabbis. The rabbi saw and no one helped me. Whether the rabbi saw or not, I'm telling you right now, is not so clear. Ben Yoyada says for sure they didn't see. So if they didn't see, it's not such a complaint on the rabbis. You can't have a tine on a person who didn't see someone else get thrown out. But I'll tell you what I do have a tine on. I began the story, not me, Chashon. There could be potential. We said over the story about Kamsa, that after he left that party, he went on this rampage. What did he do? He went maybe to Rome, or he sent a message. He got the whole situation going of rebellion, and now he brings this animal into the Beis HaMikdash. And this is the conversation. Do we kill the guy? Well, I don't know if we can kill the guy for making a blemish. Not a good idea. Do we put the animal on the altar? But if we put the animal on the altar, people might think the animal on the altar. The Rabbanon are sitting around. I don't remember the numbers I said before. 18 rabbis, 1,000 opinions. At no point did someone say, I have a good idea. Let's just talk to Bar Kamsa and tell him to back off. Did any rabbi, any person in Klai Yisrael say, listen, I have a good idea. Let's just calm this guy down. Why not? Now that could be a legitimate taina. If you didn't see me by the wedding get kicked out, okay, that's not a taina. But if you didn't come out to me for X amount of time while I'm planning this whole crazy scheme, at no point did anyone go with him. At no point did the rabbis have the ability to turn to one former teacher. Could they call one former friend? One former friend said, by the way, I don't know the rabbi. The rabbis could say, I don't know who this Bar Kamsa is. He was on the fringe of society, but someone's got to know him. The answer was no. Nobody could have been in the position to go over to Bar Kamsa and tell him, listen, relax. If you do this, you're going to affect me too. And we're buddies. We're friends. No one. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not sitting around and saying, Bar Kamsa, the Meshuggah, the Russia has the right to destroy all the Jews. No. Hashem does. He's a Marachaf. I'm not going to. One guy could destroy the whole Kaisa. That's not fair. Hashem is saying, no, it's not one guy destroying the whole Kaisa. Everyone in Klai Yisrael didn't do their job. Because not one person in Klai Yisrael is capable of going over to this guy and saying, by the way, I was good to you. I invited you for supper Friday night. You don't remember coming to my house? You don't remember I fixed your flat tire or whatever Chaverim does? No one in Klai Yisrael, rabbis down. The Gemara never says that the rabbis were the problem. Because the rabbis aren't more of a problem than any next door neighbor walking by and hearing the guy sing Zmiris. Nobody. So we live in a generation, possibly, that the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a generation of extreme loneliness is to give everyone else the opportunity to make these lonely people feel less lonely. And by that, we are returning, reversing. We are reversing the original sin, use that phrase in Judaism, we're reversing the original sin that occurred, that when Bar Kamsa was in his insane situation, not one person was capable of walking over to him and saying, come on, stop this nonsense. You're a friend of mine, stop this nonsense. No one, not one person in the whole Klal Yisrael. So who suffers? The whole Klal Yisrael. They're all shuldik, of course. Because not one person stepped up to the plate at any point during Bar Kamsa's pathetic life. I'm only using pathetic now in quotes. At any point of Bar Kamsa's pathetic life, nobody reached out to the person. So it means, and as a real spiritual idea, I told the rabbi in Texas, he loved it, so I have to say it over, that we believe as well that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is alone. He has very few people he can hang out in their houses. He had Reb Chaim Kanievsky, he had Rabbi Yashiv. There's very few places that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is comfortable walking into the house and saying, V'shachanti b'soichem, I make a base of Mikdash. That house is where I want to be. Very few. That's not, by the way, that's not insecurities on your part. That's the truth. That I'm willing to say openly. That's not insecurities. Reality is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in a very lonely situation. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is setting the system up. We're going to reverse the levers. What we're going to do is, you guys are going to start, it's better on women than on men. You're going to start this idea of reaching out in a non-obvious way, like the word, you know, in halacha, there's a question, which, it's a Reb Chaim Kanievsky has to write about it, but many do. When do you make brachas? So you take a lulav, do women make brachas on lulav? Depends, you svarad, ashkenaz. It's a lot of OCD stuff that goes on. When do you make a bracha? How you make a bracha? It's good stuff. So do we make a bracha on tzedakah? There is no bracha on tzedakah. Tzedakah is a valuable mitzvah. Tzedakah, according to the Gemara, will redeem us at the end of time. If you give enough tzedakah, the redemption will come. So shouldn't we get up there and make a bracha, by the way? A bracha on tzedakah. It sounds like a very normal thing. The Rashba has this kasha 800 years ago. And there's many answers. But one of the most obvious answers is because don't go over to someone and you put on your gartic. Like, hold 1 second. I know you need the food for a second. Give me 1 second. Make a hirotzen and put on a gartel and start singing to Hashem and say, Baruch Hashem, this guy's a poor. Never to lose. I could be mekayim a mitzvah. It's just not the way to do a mitzvah. So you, b'meila, HaKadosh Baruch Hu set the system up that you never make a bracha on tzedakah. So when you reach out to someone, whoever you might think, or the people you're not thinking about, the real fringe people who are not even on your radar at all, those people, you reach out. You as the generic collective you. The collective you reaches out and you say to these people, you know what? Let's make them feel a little more part of society. We understand that they're laughing a little too long, their clothing's a little rumpled, whatever the words are. We know it's a bad situation, but you know what? We're going to make that effort to reverse the sin originally that occurred to Bar Kamsa, and we're going to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know what? The same way we're reaching out to this lonely person in the basement and we're trying to help them out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're reaching out to you also. You're also lonely. Help us out. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't want to be lonely. No one wants to be lonely. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it's a great idea. You know what? I'll build a house for me to come also, because you know why? They'll come to my lonely house as well. They'll come to my lonely house as well. So the system is set up right now to have a lonely generation. Whatever we're attaching ourselves and sending texts and giggling, all nonsense. There's no actual connection going on. And again, possible to say that the singles crisis, but the idea of a singles crisis is very possible that the singles crisis is only to reach out to those people. Single people are, just the way the system is arranged, sadly, not to be offensive to them, they will feel more lonely. Again, married people are also lonely. Kids in high school are lonely. Everyone's lonely. But the idea is the system now is more obvious about it. People are more obvious that they're lonely. And in order for us, doesn't mean we're not lonely, but in order for us to have the merit to walk over to them, to make them feel less lonely, and hopefully with all of that, we can bring Mashiach.